And this gentleman, of course, has been on the late night TV beat, along with the rest of television, by the way, not merely late night, but he's been on it for a good long time now. And when we had the last big flare-up in late night in the early 90s, the battle to succeed Johnny Carson, he was right there on the spot covering it, not only for the New York Times, but also in a subsequent book, The Late Shift, which also made an excellent movie. I was very entertained by the movie when it came out. And again, he's just been on the beat this entire time, cultivating the sources, working the story. Excellent sources, excellent analysis. Just a true pleasure to have this gentleman on the show. Bill Carter of the New York Times, we welcome to the FDH Lounge. Good to have you on tonight, sir. How are you?
Nice to be with you.
It's great to have you on, and I guess the obvious first question would be, in light of, as I just described it, the situation that you covered in the early 90s here, the battle to succeed Johnny Carson, when this we had the last huge battle in late night of this level as far as that job and other jobs that eventually ended up materializing, Letterman at CBS, and in this case it'll be Conan moving on to either Fox or FX or somewhere else. What are some of the key similarities and some of the key differences in this? I know that Letterman points to Leno as a constant in this and says that, hey, this guy's always scheming for something here and scheming last time, scheming this time. That's what Letterman's saying about it here. But what are some of the key differences and similarities, whether it be the dynamics of the network, some of the executives involved, anything really?
Well, okay, the basic similarity is that you've got one show that two guys want. I mean, that's been the problem, really, for NBC in both of these scenarios, that, you know, you can't put two into one, and they've tried every which way to try to keep these two guys. There are, you know, the main player here, Leno, is in the middle of both, because when he was, you know, lined up the first time, he was basically in conflict with Letterman, whom a lot of fans thought deserved the show, and now he's in conflict with Conan, whom a lot of fans think deserved the show. I guess the big difference is, you can certainly say that Leno, in this case, was at least willing to step aside. He did, you know, offer to move to primetime, which was not very good for him, to be honest. It was not something perfectly suited to his talents. But he agreed 5 years ago in a thing that surprised me, really. I didn't think it made a lot of sense for him to step aside when he was number one in the ratings. But he did agree to do that 5 years ago, and he did go through with it. And, you know, I mean, there are a lot of people saying it's now still a question of him manipulating a situation. I don't think he manipulated this situation. He certainly still wants to do the job, though, and doesn't want to get off the stage. But you do have, again, a very frustrated host of the show that followed Leno, wishing he could be, you know, in the position that Leno's in. And so that part is very, very much the same.
Well, it's really come full circle, hasn't it? Because in the aftermath of that earlier situation, the battle to succeed Carson, once it was clear that Letterman was going to be going somewhere else, as it turned out, CBS, that left a vacancy at 12:30, filled by Conan O'Brien, on a short leash with the network very early on, as I believe that one-year contract was reduced to a series of renewable 13-week contracts. So the network started out with him on a short leash and distrust there about what was going to happen with his show and whether it was going to be viable. And seems like it really came full circle. The love affair probably peaked around 2004 when they decided to give him the Tonight Show and do anything they could to keep him in there. But, boy, after the 7 months and the panicking reaction from the affiliates and all the reactions that kind of came cascading down on them, again, full circle, it just seems like it was back to how it was in the early days there.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, that initially Conan did not really have strong backing at the network, and he survived really by the skin of his teeth. I mean, he was actually canceled overnight one time, and in the morning they rescinded it. But in the end, he wound up having, you know, not enough support at the network again. I mean, you know, they did go out of their way 5 years ago to think, well, this guy's the future, and made this rather unusual move to promise him a show 5 years in advance and get Jay to step aside 5 years in advance. But by the time the 5 years were up, there was already a feeling in some corners of NBC that he had lost sort of momentum and wasn't as hot as he was 5 years earlier, and Jay was still on top, and what, did this move make any sense to move Jay out of there? So there was a reluctance, a bit of reluctance anyway. They couldn't exactly not give the show to Conan at that point because they would have owed him $45 million in a penalty payment. And so that was a big reason they I think, hesitated to do that. But, you know, they came out of the box saying, you know, he's the new king of late night after one night when he did great in the Tonight Show. And after that, it seemed to be all downhill, and he lost really an awful lot of his backers at the network. And I don't think he really realized that for quite some time, because in the communication that I had with him and his show, I don't think they really felt like they were in any danger until really right at the point NBC decided to make this change.
Yeah, and it's really been a very sudden last, I won't even say 30 days, because it's really all kind of happened, you know, even since really the turnover to the new year here, when it really seemed to kind of come together fast and furious with all of the public developments here. But as you look at this, Bill, it's very interesting because it almost seems like the last year kind of settled a question about what would have happened in an alternate universe, because there are a lot of people, and I know I've been one of the people over time as far as my style of what I like with hosting a show. I always preferred quote-unquote 12:30 Dave to 11:30 Dave. But the changes that Letterman made when he got the CBS job in 93 to what he thought he needed to do to be more viable at 11:30, it stands in stark contrast to what Conan did. And he referred to it on his last show last Friday night. I mean, he did it his way. He was unapologetically the same guy at 11:30. And it's interesting because he developed more youthful demographics. It seemed in that direction as though things were going more positive for the show. But in a macro sense, it does show you the danger of being yourself and not, quote-unquote, watering down what you do to appeal to more people like Letterman did.
Well, it is true that, you know, when Letterman moved to CBS, he expanded his performance, I guess you would say, and he added viewers, and I think people felt it was the right move, and he knew that he had to do it because, you know, there's a sense that the 12:30 show is the college show. You know, you that's the show you aim at college guys. And if you get to be over 40 years old, as Dave did and then Conan did, I think they feel like that's the time you can't continue to do that. And you have to move up. You got to move up to the big leagues. You can't stay, to be 50 or 60 years old in the 12:30 show. I think Conan thought about doing it, and then right before he left his late night show, he started to reconsider the notion of what he would have to do to appeal to a wider audience at 11:30. And his very last show on the late night edition of this, he came out and he said, people are telling me I need to change, and he told his audience, I'm not going to change. I'm going to be myself. I'm not going to change. And in several of the interviews he did in the interim with me and others, he made that point again, saying, you know, I just feel like, this is what I do, and I'm going to continue to do it. Well, behind the scenes, you had NBC telling him, look, you know, when you get to 11:30 and you're the host of The Tonight Show, you can't be a niche show. You got to appeal to a broader audience. You got to appeal to the middle of the country. You can't just appeal to the East and West Coast and appeal just to 12 to 34-year-old guys, which was his core audience. And I think Conan resisted that. I think he felt like, no, I got to do what I think is right for me, and I got to do my kind of a show. So they were definitely at odds. There was a lot of problem going on behind the scenes there.
Well, hosts can say what they want, but the proof is in the pudding, and it really materialized that first night that he did his show. I watched it, and I said, yeah, this is the same guy doing the same show, and I respect his guts. But, it was very clear that was the case at the time. Now, as far as what executives thought about this, I mean, I referred at the outset here to your sources, the folks that you talked to, whatever. One of the more extraordinary things I saw over the course of the last couple of weeks was the piece that you wrote after you had spoken with Dick Ebersol at NBC, the head of sports at NBC Universal, but somebody who's had his hand in a lot of different pies over the years, very experienced and versatile executive. And he was somebody who had some very strong thoughts that essentially the narrative had been too biased against Leno, and that Leno didn't deserve the blame, and that Conan, quite frankly, did.
Yes, that's exactly what happened. He called me up. He wanted to go on the record. He wanted to respond because he felt like Leno was taking the brunt of this. And he just said, you know, it's not right. Conan shouldn't be attacking. Neither should Dave. Neither one of these guys should be attacking Leno. He's beaten them both in the ratings, and it's unseemly for them to be attacking him. He wasn't responsible for this. So He put this on the record, and I have to say it surprised me, because at the time they were in negotiations with Conan about settling his contract, and I even said to Dick, you know, you're throwing gas on a fire here. You realize that? And he said, no, I know that, and there are some people at NBC that don't want me to do this, but I'm going to come out and do it, and the Times put it on page one, so it got all the attention that he wanted. And I think there was a bit of a backlash. I know from the comments that I got, what was very interesting is the break in generation here. The generation that you would consider Generation X or Y, it got very, very angry and remains very angry at the older, the baby boom generation, which they feel like won't get off the stage. I had several people saying to me, you know, this has been frustrating to us in every way, you know, in our music, and look, at we're afraid we're not going to be employed or have health insurance. It's all because of the baby boom generation. It really started to be kind of a deep-seated resentment from one generation to the other, which was being played out, symbolized by what was happening to Conan.
That's a very interesting analysis there. As somebody who's in that Generation X, I guess I can kind of see that to a large extent. What I find very interesting, too, if you look at it from the generational point of view, you look at the way that the blogosphere has developed over the last not even a decade now, since about, say, 03 or so. The sports blog that I think most people would consider to be the largest and most influential one in the world, Deadspin, I don't know if you saw this or not, they went after Ebersol. There was somebody at NBC who had worked there, who it was anonymous, but they went after Ebersol in an attempt to set the record straight. So in its own organs, you know, this generation basically tried to put out a rebuttal to what Ebersol was saying to you.
Yes, and I think that really was one of the more interesting side stories to this whole thing, is that you really feel like the people on the internet rallied around Conan, got, you know, basically created sort of a groundswell supporting Conan, and I think did drive up his ratings in the last week for sure. That's why he started to really soar in last week. But I wrote another piece this past Monday, and basically saying I think Conan had a right to ask them, well, where were you when I needed you? Because that they weren't there for him. His numbers just weren't very good. And, you know, I think one of the reasons is that generation has a million things to do, including reading blogs and being on the internet, and they were not watching Conan on TV much. They watched him online. They watched clips online, and they DVR'd things. But they just weren't there. He wasn't even beating Letterman really in the 18 to 49 audience that you would have expected him to beat him, and was losing really badly in terms of total audience. So you can sort of say the generation really wanted Conan to win, but they weren't standing up for him early enough to make it to make the difference.
That's a very good point, because for every, you know, I'm with Coco person like me that watched stuff on Hulu, yeah, we were probably part of the problem as far as not actually watching the show when it was on, registering in the ratings. That's an excellent point right there.
Excellent. Exactly my point. That, you know, I know many young people who said to me, hey, nobody watches Conan on television. Why would you watch him on television? We don't watch television anymore. Well, you know, I understand that. That's, you know, that's certainly a choice. But it's definitely played into the decision here. He wasn't piling up the ratings that they thought he would, and I think they should have predicted this. Everybody should have seen this coming, that moving Conan into 11:30 and expecting him to then dominate in the 18 to 34 audience, especially guys, was going to be extremely challenging, given the fact you can watch Stephen Colbert there, you can watch Adult Swim, you can go online, you can play video games. There's so many other things for that audience to do now, and they do all those things, and they're not habitually watching television.
Very good point. I believe in dealing with consequences. Yeah, so those of us who wish that he was still around in that slot there probably have to think about that and live with that. You're absolutely right. I've got just two questions for you to bring this full circle here, Bill, and looking at the future. The first being, we had on a friend of ours from the New York media circles last week, Simon Applebaum, who covers TV a fair amount. He opined at the time, kind of surprisingly to me, that he thought FX was going to be a real player in this thing, that notwithstanding the fact that Conan didn't want to do the Tonight Show at 12:05, he might actually entertain basic cable if the deal were right. You wouldn't have to deal with any quibbles from the affiliates or anything that you would at Fox. As we look at this here, the future, Fox, FX, some have even mentioned Comedy Central. How would you kind of handicap this thing going forward?
Okay, I think Comedy Central is very unlikely because they're not going to move one of their guys out from 11 or 11:30. And if Conan's going to go on at 12, he should have stayed at NBC. That would make no sense for him. I think the FX people have stepped up and said enthusiastically that they would take Conan. But so have the Fox Network people. The question for the Fox Network people is, will they be able to clear it in enough markets to make it really competitive with the shows on CBS and NBC? And at the moment, that's a problem because a lot of those stations have already spent money to buy syndicated programming like The Simpsons and The Office and Family Guy and shows like that. And they make all the revenue, all the advertising revenue, if a local station runs those shows at 11 p.m. and 11:30. Now, I guess this is just me speaking, but I could see some sort of an interesting combination if Fox wanted to be creative about this, because they own FX, after all, as well. So I would say that if I were them, I would propose this. I'd say, I'm going to go to my affiliates and tell them, yes, run a syndicated show at 11 o'clock. You make more money on that. But we're going to put Conan on at 11:30. So you'll get one of the two syndicated shows that you had on. You'll still be able to retain. Then we'll run Conan from 11:30 to 12:30, and then you can use your other syndicated show at 12:30. Now, you won't make as much revenue there, but we'll have Conan in between, and you'll get a cut of the revenue from that. And however many stations do that, you make that deal. And if you still are short nationally by, I don't know, 20% or 30% or whatever you're short because stations can't do it, then you go to FX and you say, well, simulcast Conan. We'll put Conan on a simulcast on FX so the markets that don't have him on a broadcast channel can watch FX, and we'll have him on the broadcast channels elsewhere. That's what I would propose initially to him, and I think it's the most likely outcome for him because I don't think he wants to go to cable. I think he really wants to be competitive with, especially with NBC. He'd like to go back and beat their brains in if he can.
Yeah, that makes the most sense, clearly. That scenario, I had something roughly like that in my head, maybe not to the degree you spelled it out, but yeah, that makes the most sense. The last question I've got for you, Bill, and this is kind of the elephant in the room in talking to you, the question that I think most people would expect me to pose to you. In looking at the experience previously with Carson, with everything that you did chronicling that, with the Late Shift book here, I mean, I've seen some chatter recently about a potential sequel. God knows there's enough material for that, obviously, but you know, you, like many other people, also have to, you know, you've got your day job there. You have to be fair to the New York Times and give them everything that they need out of this. So in terms of negotiating the red tape or even the inclination on your part, where does it stand on this? Is there any chance of a sequel as we stand now?
Matt, I made a deal to do that a few months ago.
It's
in the works.
Oh, excellent, excellent. So all that's been navigated then. All right, what's the time frame for it?
Well, it was going to be, I had it a little bit up in the air because I didn't know how this would play out. I frankly thought Leno would last the entire season at least. So I had planned to do, you know, work all this year on it and have it come out sometime next year. Now the publisher is so enthused about what happened and wants to jump on it quickly, they'd like me to have it out in the fall. That will be a tall order, but that's what I'm trying to work on now.
Okay. All right. Well, I can't wait for that too. Not to put pressure on you to finish it, but I can't wait to read it.
I got plenty of pressure, but yeah.
Yeah. What's a little more pressure from me? But no, that's I look forward to reading it. Bill, again, you're such a well-informed person on the topic of all things television. A pleasure to have you on, sir. We'd love to do it again sometime.
All right. Well, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much, Bill. Bill Carter from the New York Times, everyone. Our great pleasure to have him on the program here tonight to talk about the late-night TV situation. And, again, you heard it at the end there. There will be a sequel to the Late Shift book coming out, and it remains to be seen if that will encompass a movie as well. Of course, HBO picked up the rights to that sucker back in, I think it was 1996 the movie came out, an excellent one.